Bonjour, welcome, hello. My name is Ali Martin-Mayer, and I'm assistant dean in charge of admissions and recruitment at the Faculty of Law, and I'm very pleased to see a lot of you today. Vous êtes à la séance d'information pour l'admission au programme de premier cycle, le programme BCLLLB. Et à ma gauche sont Sabrina et Gabrielle, qui sont deux étudiantes de première année et qui vont vous offrir leur témoignage comme étudiante ambassadrice du programme. Je voulais juste vous informer que la session est filmée parce qu'elle sera remise en ligne. Alors, je vais essayer d'être le plus animée possible, pour autant vous garder réveillé que garder réveiller les gens qui vont regarder la session plus tard. La session, c'est ça, c'est pas un webcast en direct, ça va être mis en ligne dans les jours qui vont suivre la séance, si vous connaissez des gens qui n'ont pas pu venir aujourd'hui. Alors, the session will be an hour and a half, and we will talk about the program, we will hear from the student ambassadors, we will talk about the admissions policy, process, documents, deadlines, etc., and then we will have a question and answer period. You the agenda. We will keep your questions until the end, if that's okay, because a lot of, usually when we take them spontaneously, a lot of them touch on something that will be dealt with later. So if you have your little yellow cards, if you want to write them down, that way I can have the question, read it, repeat it for the sake of the taping, and then answer them. So I hope to get through all of the questions I get. I was just wondering who here is currently in CJEP? Okay, university? Oh, okay, maybe two-thirds, one-third. Out of university for a while? A few? Okay. Perfect, so it just gives me a sense of the room. We'll touch on aspects that affect all categories of applicants, and then we'll have some tips specifically for the different categories. The green sheet is also important for us to know how helpful this is and how you've heard about it so we know how to publicize our events. So please take a moment before you leave to fill it in and leave it with one of us. Or if you don't see someone, just leave it in the room and we'll get it before we leave. Okay, so now that we'll start talking a little bit about the program. This is the part where I think it's important for you to get excited about this program, as we are, but some of you might know a lot about it already. So I'll go relatively quickly through this part. Okay, so the the program is an integrated BCLLB program, and you probably know it's a different approach to teaching law because you learn law from instead of learning civil law and common law or just civil law if you go to a law school elsewhere here, you would probably learn only one legal tradition. Sometimes you can add on courses in the other. Here, from day one, you will learn both legal traditions in the same courses. And this just builds on McGill's tradition of looking at law in a comparative way, but beyond comparative law, it's looking at law as a social phenomenon above, well, not being of one tradition or another. So it makes you be quite nimble in your as a jurist down the line. And everyone will graduate with two law degrees. And those two law degrees will open the doors to all the bars in Canada. So that's self-explanatory. And a number of bars in the U.S. as well. And the nature of the program lends itself to our students working abroad as well, because they're just, well, they're multilingual, and they're versed in different legal traditions. So a lot of them work outside of their own jurisdiction. So just a little bit of information about the program. The program is 105 credits. So it's a little bit more than your traditional single legal tradition program. And it can be done in three and a half, or 4 years, depending that'll be your choice. Most students do it in 3.5, but a good proportion finishes in 3 years. So it's quite intense, but it's very doable if you want to just take a higher course load during the terms and possibly some summer courses as well. If you choose, you can kind of personalize your degree by adding things on in addition to the 105 credits, and you can choose to do a major, which is a bit different from an undergraduate major. In this case, it means adding something in addition, and we have two areas, commercial negotiation and dispute resolution, or international human rights and development. So it means a certain number of law courses linked to these two vast categories of interest, as well as courses that touch on those but outside of law in other faculties on campus. And then you have, as part of your major, some credits will go to a term paper on that topic. You will have an internship on that topic. So if you're interested in those two areas, then you can really kind of deepen your knowledge of those two areas. Something else you can do, and it's very popular with the CJEP students, is to add a minor in any discipline that the Faculty of Arts has or science. So it's just additional credits that gives you an opportunity to indulge in something else that you've always wanted to study in addition to law. That may or may not be complementary to law. Anything is complementary to law if you want to look hard enough. But it's from those two faculties. I just want to mention we don't have a minor in management. Sometimes people ask about that. The honors program, not that many people do it, is for really the academically inclined. It's 15 more credits. It gives you a chance to do a well-researched essay supervised with a professor. It's like a good writing exercise. So, and you can decide to add these things after you've been admitted and done a year. So you don't need to decide right away, but I'm just letting you know of things that exist. Joint programs are another way to complement your law program at McGill. Those are not available to CJEP applicants, though, because they're both master's programs, and you would have required an undergrad to do the master's part. So law and MBA, and law and master's of social work, which would require a bachelor of social work. If you are interested, and then again, you can wait. A few people are admitted straight into the joint programs, and a lot of people just, after the first year of law, decide to do an MBA, or if they have the background, decide to do the other master's as well. So you don't have to decide. But if you do want to do it, you have to be admitted to both faculties independently, and then you need to have the undergraduate degree, and for the MBA, there's a minimum work experience requirement. Okay. This is a lot of detail that if and when you come to law school, you'll know a lot more about, but it's just a snapshot of the program. So a bunch of required courses in first year, a number of them transsystemic. So the first year, there's no real flexibility except for the language of instruction. And then in second year, you would have some required courses, but you can start taking on electives, and then there are a number of other courses that you have to take at some point. You have to do a writing requirement at some point. You have to take courses in human rights and social diversity, one or more, when you want. And then there are a number of elective credits that you can take, including outside law credits. So if there is a course you want to take at the University of Montreal that's not offered here, you can apply to take it there and have it count here. You can take non-law credits as well. If you want to take just one or two of these art history courses you've been interested in, you can do that as well. And if you go on an exchange, then obviously a lot of credits will be taken outside of the faculty. So there's a possibility for you to get out of this area to experiment other things. What's also great is the non-course credit option. You can take up to 15 credits, so more or less 5 activities, depending on the number of credits, to do a clinical experiential learning. So really hands-on legal clinic, a clerkship with a judge, at a competitive mooting. You can be teaching yourself to entering students in legal methodology or different courses. You can be on journals, etc. And I don't know of many students who do not avail themselves of these possibilities. Our student body is really dynamic about learning outside of the classroom. Okay, so beyond what I've just explained for credits, our student body is very active in getting involved here and outside of the faculty. So I've just here put a few of the things people do. The Legal Information Clinic is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year, and it's a great community institution. A lot of it is volunteer-based. You can do a legal clinic for courses if you're kind of seconded to another Montreal community organization, or you can volunteer a few hours a week at the legal clinic. There's a high school outreach program. There are all kinds of activities and sporting activities that go on. There's never a dull moment at the faculty. Sometimes there's so much going on that you can't book an event because you know the students are elsewhere at lunchtimes. Something else I wanted to mention as well outside of the program itself is the support that you get, the individualized support that you get from our career development office. It's two people they hire a lot of students to do work as well, but they work full-time, and the director is a graduate of the program, and she's a member of the bar as well. And so they help you decide or work through what you want to do with your life, and once that process is underway, they try to help you find the job that you want. And our students will go into government and law firms internationally. They'll have academic careers, and they stay in Montreal for the most part, but a lot of them go outside of Montreal. Our bigger markets after Montreal are Toronto, Ottawa, the U.S., but concentrated in New York and Boston for the most part. And then we do send, there are people who come to us from the Maritimes and want to go back, so we are part of these recruitment processes as well. And so this is a bit of information. Then they also organize different kinds of activities to help you. So I made a short list. It's a lot more exhaustive than that, but just to say you're not alone in trying to figure out what you will do after you've been here. Then I just wanted to give a couple of examples of the depth of McGill's network into the community and how it can be helpful to you if and when you're admitted. For example, clerkships. So you'll remember those exist as non-course credit options, and these apply to the in-courses. So doing a clerkship while you're in your third year or your fourth year at McGill, one day a week you go and work with a judge. So this is the list of the tribunals that every year have, you know, take one or more students from McGill. Then there are clerkships after you graduate. That's another option. Obviously, it's not for credits. It's for money, which is good too. So these are the tribunals, the Canadian tribunals, and then the international ones that repeatedly every year want people from McGill. And not to boast, but we send the highest number of students to the Supreme Court every year. So there you go. And then I just highlighted some of the benefits of such an experience. You know, gaining insight into advocacy, court procedure, etc., improving your writing, your research, learning about policy issues, etc. Another possibility of practical learning you can do while you're here, and that's usually very popular with applicants, is the human rights internships that exist, and they're done in the summer with a term essay that follows after. And I've just put a list of the organizations they deal with every year. So you can see it's either in Montreal with local NGOs, or it's across the world, and there's funding to support our students who go. Okay, so I think I'll stop here for the part about the program and what we're about. We'll get into the admissions part, but to kind of wake you up after I've talked for all this time. So I'll let the two ambassadors come and talk to you, and we'll start with Gabrielle.
Donc, bonjour tout le monde. Je vais essayer de faire ça dans les deux langues. Donc, moi, c'est Gabrielle. Je viens du cégep. En fait, on est deux du cégep, mais je vais essayer de faire ça assez général pour que tout le monde puisse en bénéficier. Donc, j'ai trois questions sur lesquelles, moi, je vais me concentrer. Pourquoi j'ai choisi le droit? Pourquoi McGill en particulier? Et tout le processus d'application qui, je me rappelle, étant assis à votre place, j'étais très stressée. Donc, pourquoi le droit? Moi, il y avait vraiment les grands principes de justice sous-jacents que je trouvais super intéressants. J'adorais la philo, ce truc-là que les gens, normalement, n'aimaient pas beaucoup. Je trouvais que c'était très versatile. Comme Mme Martin-Meyer a dit, ça touche à tout, dans le fond. Tu peux vraiment relier le droit à plein de domaines. Puis moi, je trouvais ça super intéressant. Puis je trouvais que c'était quelque chose qui était très, très concret. Cependant, je vais revenir là-dessus tout à l'heure. C'est pas encore concret quand tu es dans les études, mais bon. Why McGill? I really wanted to come to McGill because the diversity of students is incredible. You have people that have backgrounds that are fantastic. I had one idea in mind, a guy that's in one of my classes. He was a nomoni, I don't know how to say that in English, in a jail for 10 years, and he was with prisoners, and so he realized that he wanted to advocate for these prisoners. And you meet people like that, and I'm just a 20-year-old, I don't really have any, you know, work experience of that sort, so I thought it was really interesting to get to meet all these people from everywhere in the world, older, younger. So that was great. It's a small program. I wanted to come in, you know, to have a community kind of feeling, and it's I'm telling you stuff that I know now are facts, but that's what I thought before. It's really not competitive. Everyone really helps each other, and we're really yeah, that's it. So it's really not competitive. We're not trying to, you know, not give our notes to someone because he wasn't there or something like that. Also, le programme transsystémique, pourquoi c'est intéressant? Oui, c'est unique. C'est sûr que des fois, quand tu es dedans, c'est compliqué. Tu veux savoir c'est quoi le droit maintenant, comment je fais pour régler ce problème-là. Mais je trouve vraiment que ils nous apprennent à penser. Souvent, les gens vont vous dire, « McGill, c'est très philosophique, c'est très théorique. » Pourquoi? Moi, je ne comprenais pas pourquoi c'était comme ça. Dans le fond, c'est qu'on part vraiment de grandes idées pour pouvoir les appliquer à des cas concrets. Puis, je trouve ça super intéressant de ne pas seulement s'attarder à un cas en particulier, mais vraiment de revenir et de se dire, « OK, mais pourquoi ils ont fait ça? Pourquoi le juge a fait ça? Est-ce qu'on peut critiquer ce que le juge a fait? Est-ce qu'on peut… » Fait que c'est super intéressant. On ne reste pas sur les faits. On fait vraiment une grande discussion. I really wanted a challenge. I don't know for people that are in CJEP or even in university, but sometimes it can get a little boring. People can get a little boring, and you just want to have that extra step. I don't know if that's a little un peu prétentieux, mais je trouvais que je voulais avoir un petit quelque chose de plus, un petit peu de challenge. Puis trust me, you've got it here. Les gens qui t'entourent, c'est ridicule. T'as vraiment des gens de partout. Tu te dis, mon Dieu, qu'est-ce que je fais là quand tu regardes les gens qui ont vraiment accompli des choses incroyables. Mais donc, voilà pourquoi McGill. Est-ce que ça va, le bilinguisme? C'est un peu bizarre pour vous? C'est correct? OK. Je change comme d'une phrase à l'autre. OK. Now, for the part that may be interesting more, they're going to talk about it more in details after, but for the application, I'm sure you've checked up online what you have to do. So, there are, like, many steps to that. I'll give you, like, for me, what I found was very useful, and I got to talk with other people about it. So, for the letter, I don't know, the personal statement, I think you call it in English, I think what I focused on is what was the question that was asked to me. I know a lot of people that made like really great essays about a subject, but really go and look up like what are they trying to get out from you. And what I was trying to say in my letter was what makes me unique, what makes you special as an individual. And they ask you questions like what are you going to bring to the faculty, what would you do, what you know. You have to look up stuff that you could concrètement faire à la faculté. Puis qu'est-ce qui fait dans le fond que vous vous intéressez au droit? Regardez les questions, c'est très utile. Partez pas en vous disant mon Dieu, qu'est-ce que j'écris. Tu sais, il y a beaucoup de gens du cégep qui se disent c'est donc bien vague, c'est très flou. Mais non, tu sais, il y a des questions. Puis faites-vous un plan, tu sais, puis ça prend du temps. C'est vraiment un processus d'introspection incroyable. Juste moi, en écrivant ma lettre, j'ai appris des choses sur moi-même. Puis c'est long, tu sais, prenez-vous pas un petit peu d'avance, là. Je sais pas c'est quand les deadlines, mais c'est vraiment un beau processus. Moi, je trouve que juste de la faire, c'est une expérience en tant que telle. Qu'est-ce que que j'allais dire. Ah oui, c'est pas un CV, hein. Il y a beaucoup de gens, écrivez pas, ben je sais pas si je peux vraiment donner des conseils, là, mais dans le fond, c'est pas le but, je pense pas que c'est de, t'sais, oui, c'est vendre votre salaire un peu, mais pas de dire, moi j'ai fait ça, 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 puis donc voilà pourquoi vous devriez me prendre. C'est vraiment comment vous pourriez contribuer à la vie, à la faculté, qu'est-ce qui vous attire à McGill en particulier, t'sais, qu'est-ce qu'il y a de spécial. Fait qu'il y a une partie de renseignement aussi là-dedans qui peut être intéressante. Je ne sais pas si ça vous intéresserait de savoir qu'est-ce que moi j'ai fait au cégep comme activité, comme avant de rentrer à la faculté. C'est vraiment pas des conseils de faites ça ou faites pas ça. Je vais juste vous donner des exemples de trucs de quoi je parlais dans ma lettre. Moi, je suis partie en échange un an entre mon secondaire et mon cégep. Fait que je trouvais ça intéressant de parler de ça. J'ai fait une équipe de débat. J'ai fait les simulations des Nations Unies. Je faisais beaucoup de bénévolat avec les immigrants parce que je parlais des langues différentes. Fait que je trouvais ça intéressant d'en parler. Puis, j'avais un travail à temps partiel. Puis, ça peut être niaiseux comme ça, mais ils te demandent combien d'heures tu as travaillé pendant tes études sur le CV. Fait que ça peut être quelque chose d'intéressant de dire que vous avez fait autre chose que juste étudier. So, that's it for me. For the letter of recommendation, the two letters, I think everyone needs those. I would say, if you can get teachers that you did like extracurricular stuff with, it's really good because if you only have teachers that taught you classes, they don't really know you as a person. And as much as you like, you know, you have a really good teacher, you had a really good grade in that class, well, they don't know you. They can say, yeah, she's done a really good work and she's a very, très travaillante, but it's not the same thing as having someone, you know, talk about your character and how you are with people. So that's something that's interesting to have. And take yourself in advance also, because teachers, you think it's easy for them, but they really take a long time. I don't know if you've ever written a letter of recommendation for someone, but it's hard, you know, to try to really portray the person. Am I out of time? Can I go a little bit more? Okay. J'ai pas tant d'autres choses à dire. Pour ce qui est des notes, je sais que c'est une grosse partie de ce que les gens se demandent. Oui, c'est important. Faut pas comme délaisser des matières, là. Moi, je me suis vraiment concentrée sur tout. Il n'y avait pas une matière que je laissais tomber. Fait que, en tout cas, c'est pour les notes. Puis pourquoi? Moi, je me suis souvent demandé pourquoi est-ce qu'ils veulent un standard aussi élevé. Honnêtement, Sabrina va vous en parler, là. Les cours, c'est intense. C'est du travail. Puis c'est une grosse marche à monter du cégep, puis je pense d'un autre bac. Puis on rush, mais on est tous dans le même bateau. Comme je vous dis, c'est pas compétitif. Tout le monde s'aide, c'est le fun, mais c'est pas de la petite bière, là. C'est pas relax, là. Mais c'est le fun. T'sais, si vous avez un intérêt pour ça, là, c'est vraiment le fun, puis je le conseille. Puis t'apprends tellement, ça fait pas longtemps qu'on est là, puis je sens que j'ai vraiment appris des choses. Dernière chose que je voulais dire, la fameuse entrevue, ça c'est pour les cégepiens. Moi, c'était comme le stress de ma vie, là. J'avais vraiment peur. Mais dans le fond, je pense que la chose à voir, c'est j'y vais, je veux montrer qui je suis, mais il n'y a pas en préparation à faire. Oui, tu peux penser à. J'ai relu ma lettre, t'sais, je me demandais c'est quoi mes raisons, mais. Je pense pas vraiment qu'il y a de formule gagnante, là. Tu sais, il y a des gens qui disent, ouais, ils vont vous poser des questions super difficiles, impossibles à répondre. Moi, j'ai pas eu de questions si difficiles que ça. Tu sais, si vous avez une opinion sur des choses, puis, tu sais, ils sont pas là pour vous coincer, je pense. C'est vraiment pour apprendre à vous connaître. Puis, ça a été un processus qui, comme la lettre, m'a vraiment aidé, tu sais, dans la vie, là, à parler à des. Comme dans une entrevue de travail ou quoi que ce soit. Donc, voilà, je serai très disponible pour des questions après. Merci. Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody. Hard to follow after everything she said. But, okay, I would just like to start. I'm just going to fill all the things that I think that she missed a bit. no insult. It's just like, because she did CJEP in social science background. I did it in science background. So it just goes to show that everybody is welcome to the Faculty of Law, and there's, like, no particular background that they're going to, like over others. It's really, like, law, it's, like, really the basis, and any knowledge that you can bring to the program is good knowledge, and you can always apply prior knowledge to the cases you're going to read, to all the information you're going to learn. So, like, for me, science was very useful in the sense that I learned a good work ethic in science, like, for science people, anybody in science here? All right. well, for you guys, like, I know that science, like, there's a big workload in CJEP, so it really helps you organize your time better to balance out different extracurricular activities that you're doing. Also, for the letter, like Gabrielle said, you have to be not unique, but you have to be genuine in your letter. Don't if there is nothing big that you did. You don't think that it's something small, because any experience is good experience. You really have to show that what that experience brought to you and how that helped you become the person you are, because McGill really has like different profiles. Like, there's not one type of person they're looking for. So that's how I base my letter. And like, humor is good for a letter. Like, I mean, I know for my letter, like, I start off with a joke. There's no formula, but there's just different techniques that you want to capture their attention, because they're reading so many letters that at one point you have to be different. You have to be different, because or else they're just going to like maybe put piles, and then you want to be in the right pile. And for the interview, like she said, it was very, you have to come in there relaxed, comfortable, and they're going to probably ask you a lot about what you wrote, so don't lie in your CV or don't lie in your letter. Everything you say, you have to have done it. If you're saying you're interested in something, you have to actually be interested in that thing. So just tips. As for the life of law, like, CJEP students were 30 out of around 170 students. So it could get overwhelming, but everyone's very welcoming. So far, as for the workload, it's a lot of reading. There's no midterms, for example. Like, we have 1 year, a lot of our classes are during a whole year. So we have 3 credits per class. So our first real exam is going to be like close to November, December. So for the first couple of months, it's a lot of you're acquiring knowledge. You're learning different texts. You're starting to understand what law is, civil law, common law. I'd say that every day I read about 3 to 4 hours of readings. And if you organize your time well, that's not that bad. Like, on the weekends, I still have time to do other activities, but during the week, organize yourselves, make timetables. It's around 3 hours. As for classes, the teachers are all very accomplished. And at the same time, they're very humble. So don't be afraid to ask questions. We have a lot of questions in class. Everyone participates, and there's a very good dynamic in the classes. Every class, usually, you're going to be divided into sections. So there's going to be a French and English teacher for every class you're learning. So you can choose whichever language you prefer. Also, even if you have a teacher in French and you express yourself better in English, you can write your exams in English. So there's no limit to like which language you write. And in class, you can ask questions in whichever language you prefer. All the teachers are bilingual. And for the first couple of months, it's really integrating. So we only got into like our core material a couple of weeks ago. Before that, we had Frosh. Does anyone know what Frosh is? Yes? Yeah, exactly. So we had like a whole week of events. That's the great opportunity, you guys. If you make the program, you should definitely join that, because it's a great way to learn different people, to meet new people, and to start already building your network of friends. Also, we had an integration week after Frosh, which was like a week where teachers discuss what law was, because a lot of people, we all think we know law, but it's such an abstract concept that it's really hard to really understand it. So we had a whole week to go through that, and after that we started our classes. And for now, the workload is the balancing between work and other activities like sports. For example, like, I'm on an intramural team for basketball, so I don't think it's that difficult. If you're organized and if you're you're driven and determined, there's nothing you can't do. So I'm going to end there, and good luck to everybody.
Wow, that was really super helpful. We've had a lot of student ambassadors over the years, and I think if you want to, these are really helpful tips if you want to go and view it online again, because they're giving you a lot of information, but I think there's a lot of really good tips, and I don't know what else I have to say. but I'll find something. Alors. Bon, là, on passe à la partie plus qui concerne l'admission. Je pense qu'il y a beaucoup de bons points qui sont ressortis de leur présentation au sujet de l'admission en tant que telle. Tout ça, c'est sur notre site web, mais je l'ai mis ici là, pour vous rafraîchir la mémoire. Notre processus d'admission est assez, on en est très fiers, c'est quelque chose qui prend une grande place dans la vie de la faculté. Et c'est un processus qui nous permet, on pense, puis on est fiers du résultat, de choisir les candidats qui sont vraiment les plus aptes à contribuer et bénéficier de notre programme, du caractère unique de notre programme. C'est beaucoup plus détaillé là, sur le site web exactement ce qu'on recherche, la curiosité intellectuelle, le leadership, etc. Vous pourrez aller voir sur le site. Toutes les demandes sont revues de façon globale, c'est-à-dire qu'on regarde les notes avec le reste du dossier pour comprendre la performance académique dans son contexte. Donc, le travail, ça peut être un empêchement médical pendant une partie de nos études, etc. Donc, c'est quelque chose qui prend beaucoup d'attention et beaucoup de temps, mais on pense que ça vaut la peine. Donc, puis je vais parler un peu, bon, il y a différents éléments, physiquement, là, il y a différents éléments de votre demande qui sont les supports qu'on utilise pour faire cette évaluation globale là, de votre dossier. On recherche la diversité dans la classe parce que, bon, la nature de notre programme se prête à ça aussi. On veut des gens qui ont des points de vue différents parce qu'on parle du droit de façon très différente. Donc, on ne peut pas faire ça dans un vacuum si on est tous pareils. Alors, on essaie d'avoir des gens qui, des étudiants qui vont contribuer différentes perspectives, différentes expériences et différentes aspirations de carrière. Et, bon, la diversité veut dire plein de choses, donc des gens qui ont étudié dans différentes disciplines, comme on a dit tantôt, mais aussi des gens qui viennent de milieux différents. Quand il y a des gens, par exemple, ils sont la première génération à aller à l'université, nous, on trouve ça très important d'avoir des gens comme ça dans la classe aussi. Diversité linguistique, ethnique, géographique, c'est sûr qu'on essaie d'avoir des gens du Québec et d'ailleurs, de l'extérieur du Québec. Vous auriez certainement remarqué que la faculté vit sa vie dans un contexte bilingue, et ce n'est pas un bilingue où tout se fait dédoubler dans les deux langues. C'est un bilinguisme où on passe, on présume que tout le monde comprend les deux langues, puis il y a des cours en français, il y a des cours en anglais, vous pouvez faire vos examens dans une langue ou dans l'autre. Mais ceci nous mène à avoir une exigence au niveau de l'admission. Il faut déjà que le bilinguisme soit là. Donc, on parle d'un bilinguisme passif parce qu'on ne force pas les gens à parler, à bien parler ou à parler ou à bien écrire dans leur langue seconde. Ça peut être pas nécessairement leur langue, donc langue officielle seconde. Mais ils doivent être capables de le comprendre à un haut niveau. Donc, là, je pense que vous avez vraiment un bon échantillon, là, parce que, c'est ça, les gens vont parler vite. Ce que vous allez lire dans vos cours, c'est sûr que c'est beaucoup plus complexe que ce qui est ici, mais on parle d'un niveau là, haut intermédiaire, là, vraiment intermédiaire, élevé, là, presque juste en dessous du niveau avancé dans votre langue seconde. Puis, c'est quelque chose qu'on va chercher dans votre dossier au moment de l'admission. Alors, je voulais ensuite, bon, là, on va parler un peu de la réalité des choses. Voici quelques statistiques sur le niveau de compétitivité du bassin. Donc, on refuse à peu près 1000 personnes par année. Alors, on en refuse beaucoup plus qu'on en admet. La moyenne l'année dernière pour les universitaires était autour de 84%. Ceux qui ont écrit le LSAT, la moyenne était de 163. Et puis, j'ai une autre diapo pour les cégepiens. Cette année, 18% de la classe venait du cégep et 16% de la classe cette année avait au moins une maîtrise ou plus. Donc, il y a vraiment un éventail assez large là, dans la classe. Puis, 41% de la classe a fait le LSAT, mais si vous êtes au cégep, c'est vraiment très rare que les cégepiens l'aient fait. Donc, votre compétition en quelque part, ne l'a pas fait, le LSAT, donc vous êtes pas, devriez pas vous sentir la pression de le faire. Mais on va parler du LSAT plus pour les autres catégories de candidats. Puis l'âge moyen dans la classe est de 24 ans. Bon, pour les cégepiens, l'année dernière, 318 demandes, 80 entrevues, 37 offres, puis il y en a 32 dans la classe. Puis la cotère moyenne l'année dernière, ça rendissait à 34. Et puis on est allé, là, vous voyez le range là, de 30,2 jusqu'à 37,8. Donc c'est quand même bien, hein? Je ne sais pas si vous avez lu nos messages officiels sur le minimum requis au cégep. Le minimum requis. On lit tous les dossiers. Un dossier qui est en dessous de 30, les chances sont vraiment très minces d'être admis. Mais en 30 et 32, quand le dossier est vraiment remarquable à d'autres égards, il peut être convoqué en entrevue, puis ça peut fonctionner comme vous le voyez ici. Et puis aussi, on est conscient des fois, la cotère peut être un peu plus basse, mais la personne a comme 88 de moyenne dans son cégep, alors on regarde ça évidemment aussi. Tous les candidats, ça je vais revenir, tous les candidats du cégep auront été vus en entrevue avant d'être admis. On peut faire des entrevues pour les candidats matures et très rarement dans le cas des candidats universitaires. Mature, c'est adulte en français, excusez-moi, je me suis trompée. En fait, ici, il y a différentes... je vais y revenir plus tard à cette partie-là. Il y a certaines exigences pour être éligible à l'admission. Donc, si on vient du cégep, donc c'est d'avoir fait compléter son DEC avant de commencer en droit, ou son DEC ou un baccalauréat français fait au Québec. Donc, on sait qu'il y a des équivalences pour ça. On peut être considéré un candidat du cégep même après un an d'université. Donc, ça arrive des fois que quelqu'un soit est refusé après le cégep ou juste n'a pas fait de demande, commence l'université puis va faire une demande en cours pour le 1er mars, en cours de sa première année d'université. Sinon, pour être un candidat universitaire, puis on s'attend à la même chose des candidats adultes, c'est d'avoir au moins 60 crédits universitaires. Dans les faits, vous êtes mieux de compléter votre bac universitaire parce que, je ne me souviens pas la dernière fois qu'on a admis quelqu'un qui n'allait pas avoir terminé son baccalauréat avant de commencer en droit. Donc, même si sur papier, là, puis ça, je pense que c'est une règle un peu ancienne qu'on va peut-être revoir un jour où on allait voler les superstars là, qui avaient des très, très bonnes notes à la Faculté des arts ou en sciences, puis on leur permettait de commencer le droit sans avoir fini leur diplôme, mais on ne le fait pratiquement plus. Non, en tout cas, moi, je ne l'ai pas vu. Le bilinguisme, ce qu'on va faire, c'est qu'on va on ne demande pas aux candidats de faire un test standardisé de français ou d'anglais pour faire foi de leur bilinguisme, mais on va regarder dans le dossier les différents éléments pour voir si le bilinguisme est là. Si vous êtes tous du Québec, est-ce qu'il y a quelqu'un ici qui est venu de l'extérieur du Québec? How exciting! Thank you. Quand quelqu'un vient du Québec, c'est plus difficile de s'imaginer qu'ils ne comprennent pas les deux langues parce que, en tout cas, du cégep, on va voir les notes des cours dans l'autre langue. Sinon, de manière générale, on regarde les cours à l'université. Il y a une petite partie dans la demande où on vous demande comment vous avez appris les deux langues, l'anglais et le français. Donc, ça, c'est comme un point de départ pour nous, pour voir. Puis, on cherche vraiment confirmation dans le dossier. Si vous avez travaillé dans un milieu qu'on sait qui est francophone ou anglophone, si vous avez fait des échanges dans des pays ou dans des universités de ces langues-là, ça va nous rassurer. Puis, si vous avez un bon dossier, mais qu'on n'est pas sûr de votre niveau, bien, on va faire une vérification avec vous. OK. Le dossier académique, ça, c'est un gros morceau. Vous devez nous soumettre un dossier scolaire complet qui inclut
Puis comme on a dit ici, là, il n'y a pas de programme préféré. Ça, c'est vraiment, souvent des gens nous posent la question en quoi je devrais étudier. Ils ont des cégepiens qui vont nous demander en quoi étudier à l'université pour augmenter leur chance d'être pris après leur bac. Puis on leur dit que nous, on ne recommande rien parce qu'on essaie justement d'avoir des gens de tous les backgrounds. Alors, faites ce que vous aimez, puis c'est sans doute ce qui va vous servir le mieux parce que vous allez sans doute avoir des bonnes notes. Alors, on va regarder votre dossier scolaire. Donc, le cégep, on va l'avoir directement. Tout ce qui est universitaire, échange, cours de langue, études supérieures, c'est sûr. Puis, en tout cas, vous allez voir en ligne, là, c'est pas obligé d'être des originaux, mais on va avoir besoin de ça. Puis, on a besoin du code permanent si vous êtes du cégep, etc. Bon, ça, c'est un peu comme la logistique. Ce que le comité regarde quand il regarde votre dossier scolaire, c'est la constance. Donc, c'est vrai que c'est important de ne pas négliger certaines matières parce que si on voit qu'il y a des notes vraiment plus basses dans un domaine, déjà, on peut se demander si les aptitudes qui ressortent de ce domaine-là ne sont pas plus faibles ou si c'est juste une question d'investissement de temps et de discipline. Bien, si ce n'est pas là, ce n'est pas mieux non plus. Donc, la constance, c'est important. Ça peut arriver qu'il y ait un accro. Des fois, les gens se demandent, là, c'est comme ils vont avoir un B- dans tout leur livre de notes, là, puis ça arrive. Là, c'est, mais puis des fois, il peut y avoir des raisons, des circonstances atténuantes qui vont expliquer pourquoi vous avez eu un moins bon trimestre. Puis ça, vous pouvez nous fournir cette information-là aussi. De manière générale, on cherche la constante. Une amélioration, c'est mieux que quand ça empire. Le niveau de difficulté des cours que vous avez choisis, la diversité dans une certaine mesure aussi. Donc, ça, c'est ce qu'on regarde. Then, about the LSAT. So, the LSAT is not required. It's not required in any law school in Quebec, so we don't require it here. It's only available in English. But if you have written in or will write it, then we want to... We want you to tell us that you have, and then we will go and get the score. And it's really important that you're honest in that process, because if ever we were inclined to admit, we will check. And if we find an LSAT and you didn't disclose, then you may not get that admission. So it's really important to disclose it. Why write it? Well, if you're applying outside of Quebec, of course you're going to have to write it because it's required everywhere else in North America, and so that's one reason why you might be writing it. You might choose to write it even though you're applying only in Quebec to bring another element into your file if ever your academic performance is below or way below the admitted range or the admitted average or close to the bottom of the range. It might help your file up if you do really well. Of course, if you don't, then it will kind of hurt you as well. So, but that's standardized thing. So if you do choose to write it, make sure to give yourself time to prepare and study because that score will follow you for a number of years. If you do write it, we highly recommend that you write it no later than the December sitting. Because our deadline being November 1st and the LSAT being an important element of your file, if it's going to be there, your file will be incomplete until we have the score. And if we get the score, let's say mid-December, then you're only a month and a half behind the deadline in terms of having your file be ready to be circulated. So it's not that bad because... I mean, there's a big bulk of file, obviously, after November 1st. It takes some time. So it's not so bad. But if you wait until February to write it, then your file's not complete until late February or March. Then the class is not full, but it's on its way to being full. So you're fighting for fewer spots. So some people make that gamble because they think that second score, or it's going to really improve their chances of being admitted. We say it's probably going to harm you more than not. So hopefully you thought about writing it before today if you're planning on doing it. Okay, reference letters. New this year. We've always asked for two reference letters. this year we asked for two, and we will not take more than two, which is a change from last year. So, and when you fill out your application, you put the names of your two referees in the first two fields, and these are the reference letters that we will take. Anything else will not be included in the file. We recommend strongly encourage you to submit academic reference letters because it's most helpful to confirm that you are academically suited for this program. And we're not hiring for a job here, we're hiring you to be a student. So academic letters are most helpful. However, you can submit any letter you wish. Mature applicants, it's very common to see either one academic and one professional, sometimes two professional letters. And in that category, that might make a lot of sense. But a CJEP applicant or a university applicant, your best bet is really to nurture relationships with the two professors and get those letters. Personal reference letters are not helpful to us. It's not that frequent we see it, but my uncle, the judge, writing me a personal reference letter, not going to be helpful. It has to be from someone who's been your professor or been in a supervisory role to eliminate as much personal bias as possible. There are instructions on our website, like a one-page document that you would give to your referee about how to submit the letter and what you're looking for in the letter, so make sure you get that. And the referees can send the letters electronically, so nowadays, like, everything's electronic, the submission of your documents and the reference letters. So that's easy. Oh, about the reference letters, as we said, make sure to give enough time to your referees to write it. But it's your responsibility to make sure they send them in, so because it's your application. So if you need to be on their tails to make sure they do it, and you need to keep going on Minerva to make sure that we did get it before the deadline. Alors, le CV, nouveau cette année, un autre petit changement, le CV doit tenir sur deux pages. Ouh, est-ce que ça a un effet? Parce que moi, j'ai assez hâte de lire des CV de deux pages. Parce qu'il y en a qui ça rentre sur deux pages, il y en a même qui soumettent des CV d'une page, parce que c'est la pratique dans d'autres industries. Mais il y en a qui soumettent, même des gens, par exemple, du cégep, qui vont soumettre un CV de 12 pages, ben, en tout cas, je sais pas. Il y a beaucoup de choses à dire, mais à un moment donné, il y a peut-être un petit ménage à faire en termes de prioriser ce qui est le plus pertinent. Puis c'est vous qui choisissez, hein, ce qui est le plus pertinent. Mais ce qui est intéressant pour nous, c'est de voir ce que vous avez fait, en plus de vos, ben, de voir vos études, toute une distinction scolaire que vous pourriez avoir eue. C'est très important. Et ce qui vous occupe en dehors de ça. Donc, ça peut être l'extracurriculaire, ça peut être le travail. Puis c'est important de nous l'indiquer et puis d'indiquer le nombre d'heures pour qu'on puisse prendre ça en considération quand on regarde la performance scolaire. Puis, il y a des gens qui pensent que c'est plus important de faire du bénévolat ou de travailler dans des projets extracurriculaires que de travailler, mais si on veut la diversité dans la classe qu'on recherche, il faut s'ouvrir à des gens qui n'ont pas nécessairement le luxe de juste faire du bénévolat tout le temps. Donc, on peut être très impressionnant puis avoir toutes les bonnes aptitudes pour venir étudier venant de tous ces backgrounds-là. Puis quelqu'un qui a étudié, puis qui a travaillé fort, puis qui a eu des bonnes notes, c'est super impressionnant. Ensuite, l'essai personnel, je pense que vous en avez parlé peut-être même mieux que je pourrais le faire. Oui, allez voir sur le site, là, on a détaillé quand même pas mal en détail. Ben, on a mis quand même pas mal de détails pour vous expliquer l'idée derrière ça, puis un peu comme les erreurs qu'on voit souvent. Là. Oui, c'est pas un résumé du CV, parce qu'on a votre CV. Fait, utilisez vos deux pages de l'aide personnelle, pour vraiment parler, comme élever la réflexion et la discussion à un autre niveau. Oui, c'est un exercice pour nous de voir si vous êtes capable de vous exprimer correctement, clairement, d'avoir des idées originales. Ce n'est pas juste pour faire une liste d'épicerie de ce que vous avez fait. C'est sûr que ce que vous avez fait peut être un catalyseur pour vos raisons de venir étudier en droit. Ça, c'est clair. Mais on s'attend à ce que vous ayez fait une certaine introspection au-delà de juste affirmer que vous voulez étudier en droit. C'est important de pendant que vous faites ça, c'est un exercice vraiment, de décider de venir étudier en droit, c'est comme une grande remise en question existentielle en quelque part, parce que c'est un grand investissement en temps. Puis le droit, c'est une discipline qui peut aussi se prêter un peu à choisir de faire ça par défaut, parce que ça impressionne les parents, puis ça paraît bien, puis je déciderai plus tard ce que je vais faire, puis pourquoi pas. C'est peut-être, il y en a quand même plusieurs de ces candidats-là. Puis pour nous, là, ça manque un peu de drive, des dossiers comme ça. Donc, si vous faites la réflexion de pourquoi vous voulez étudier, puis que ça transparaît dans votre essai personnel, bien, ça va être beaucoup plus convaincant. Quelque chose d'autre que je voulais dire plus de manière générale, nous, on trouverait ça très normal. Vous pouvez être intéressé à venir à McGill, vous trouvez que notre programme est fantastique. Moi, je trouve que c'est vraiment un bel endroit pour étudier. Mais c'est normal aussi de faire des demandes ailleurs si vous êtes vraiment motivé par le droit. Il n'y a pas de faculté de droit au Québec ou au Canada qui sont mauvaises. Les standards sont quand même assez élevés dans toutes les facultés au Canada. Donc, vous ne vous trompez pas vraiment. Puis, chaque faculté a ses forces. Nous, évidemment, la nature de notre programme fait qu'on a certaines forces. Puis, il y en a d'autres vraiment qui ont d'autres forces qui sont peut-être mieux pour vous. Donc, je ne sais pas si je devrais dire ça, je ne veux pas me tirer dans le pied, là, mais je pense que c'est juste par honnêteté. Là, je les connais, mais vis-à-vis des autres facultés de droit, je sais qu'il y a de très bons programmes aussi. Bon, pour ceux qui vont avoir une entrevue, voici juste quelques détails, mais je pense que nos étudiantes en ont parlé peut-être plus. Mais bon, l'entrevue dure environ 22-25 minutes. Ça va être par deux professeurs de la faculté. Il va y avoir au moins une question dans votre autre langue. On est là pour vérifier votre niveau de compréhension. On n'est pas là pour rendre mal à l'aise pendant toute l'entrevue en étant dans votre deuxième langue. Ça se fait en personne idéalement, mais si c'est vraiment pas possible, on peut le faire par télé ou vidéoconférence. Puis les entrevues, là j'aurais dû changer un mot, là, mais en anglais. C'est là qu'on voit hein, les textes de loi dans les deux langues. Des fois, ils ne disent pas la même chose. Fait que quelle loi s'applique? Les entrevues ont lieu en février, avril et mai, mais ce n'est pas CJEP Interviews are scheduled in February, April and May. Celles qu'on fait en février, c'est les quelques entrevues qu'on peut faire avec les candidats adultes, advanced standing, etc. Puis évidemment, les CJEPiens, c'est après le 1er mars, donc c'est en avril. A bit more information on the application process. So the application is available now. You can go and apply. The supporting documents are all to be uploaded electronically. If you do upload it electronically, please don't send them by mail as well, because then it kind of duplicates the work and we have to be like, oh, we got this, and then we go into the system and see we already got it, and then we have to make sure that they're both the same document. So if you send them electronically and you see on Minerva that it's been confirmed there, just don't send it by mail. And when it's been uploaded, like transcripts and things like that, make sure you go and look at what it looks like, because sometimes when you scan, it's not, or, you know, it resizes, and then it's almost impossible to read the letter grades. So just make sure to do that. It's your responsibility to make sure your file is complete. Make sure to check Minerva regularly, because close to the deadline, you might be sweating a little bit if your documents are not in. And if you've sent them, if you've put them in electronically, it's going to work quickly, but if you send them by mail, then there's like a 48-hour delay between receiving them and, you know, sorting them, stamping them, uploading them, confirming, and so just stay on top of that around the deadline. And more generally, we're here to help you. We're a team at the admissions office, and I think most of us are here. You can ask all questions afterwards, but we're here to help you prepare the best application possible to the extent that we can do so fairly with everyone. So we try to give as much information as we can. If you call with questions, we try to respond quickly. We're not the enemy here. Like, sometimes people will get really worked up about things, and so it's really more helpful to collaborate with us. A lot of it is on the website, so maybe around the deadline before you call, if you can just make sure that you've checked every other source of information before you call, so that we can deal with the real specific questions in a timely fashion. Okay, deadlines. So most categories are due November 1st. To complete your online application and, you know, pay your application fee, and then you have a few days to finish uploading all of your supporting documents. The same logic applies for CJEP candidates, but there the deadline is March 1st. And just for your information, these are the total annual fees for our students. So it's a lot more for international applicants. This, I have a version in English and a version in French, and it's all on our website, but it's just a timeline so that throughout the cycle you know where things are at, so you can read it. We start making offers if we can December, January. We have interviews. There's like a second wave of offers once we know that the people who got the first offers are or are not coming. Then we know how many spaces we have left. So we make another big round of offers after April, but we'll make offers in between, and we'll make refusals throughout as well. So you'll probably all have a decision. Well, last year we were able to do it by mid to the end of May. And then, more information on that. And okay, we're ready for the question and answer. I have a number here, but if you haven't given your little yellow sheets, Josie's going to get that one, or you can give them to Manon in the back. Already gotten a good number, so I'll start with you. Alors, des questions dans la catégorie CEGEP. What makes a CEGEP student stand out during admissions? And then there was another one, what is required of a CEGEP student when applying to the law program? So they kind of go together. I don't know how much more I would say than what has been said. CEGEP applicants tend to be very strong academically, and so that's something that for sure we will look at. Maturity is the underlying word of what we look for in terms of, I guess, that we tried to confirm at the interview, like intellectual maturity. And we will test that in all kinds of ways. What I was refused after CEGEP, I applied and had an interview because I had good grades and a good CV, and then I had never had an interview in my life, and I don't think I was prepared for it well, and I didn't do so well. And in retrospect, I'm very glad that they picked up on that, because I don't think I was ready for the type of demands that would be put on me. So it's a little bit that stuff that we will look for, but in terms of what's in their CV, it's all the same for all the applicants, mature, CEGEP, or others. So I hope that's helpful. This one about the proportion of CEGEPers we saw on the slide. If a CEGEP student graduates in December, can they apply for September entry but still take some courses from January to May? They can take courses, but obviously not in law. They can do so in university. elsewhere. If you have a CJEP R score of 30, will you still be considered if you have community involvement and experience related to law? All files are considered. The ones that are below 30, we have to kind of draw a line somewhere. It will be read more with a presumable, you know, we will definitely be looking for something to make us think that we should consider interviewing that candidate. So that's borderline academically. But if the CV is really outstanding, it can be great. I think that's a CJEP one as well. If you take a law major in college, are you going to consider it as an advantage? It can be good. If the grades are good, we'll probably know that the skills, you know, that are helpful in law are there. But I don't think it gives a great advantage, because if we did, then we wouldn't get the people who apply out of science and all these other backgrounds. So I don't know if that's what they tell you in the marketing of these programs, but marginal, very marginal advantage. Okay. These are all LSAT questions. Okay, if we canceled our LSAT score in October and we'll take it in December, does that negatively impact our admissions chances? How are marks received on exchange? Okay, so if you took it and canceled, no, it's a neutral factor. We'll presume either you were sick or you didn't feel as well prepared as you thought you would be. We don't have a score, so it's going to be a neutral factor, and we'll only look at the December one. How are marks received? Marks from exchange considered the same as the other grades? Sometimes it's a bit more difficult to have. We might have less experience in assessing the relative strengths of those grades because it's in a foreign institution. Although we know a high number of institutions abroad. If the underlying question here is like, I partied through my exchange and had terrible grades, is that going to hurt my chances? Well, a little bit, yes. Okay. Could an exceptional LSAT result outweigh the R score? It would help the file up for sure.
Thank you.
But it depends what the R score is. But for sure, 2 years of studies and one test, one has the consistency. Like, it reveals another side of your academic discipline. But it could certainly help confirm that you have an aptitude for law, for sure. Does being in McGill in another program, such as history or politics, give you a better advantage regarding admission if you have great grades? And I guess the part here is just if you're at McGill as opposed to another university. Our biggest university cohort does come from McGill. I think it's more of a natural, like, people like to stay local, or if they know they like it here. I think we just have a lot more applicants from McGill. Obviously, we know it's a very demanding university to be admitted into, so there's a certain guarantee of quality there, but that could be said of a number of other schools in the country or outside of the country. So in and of itself, no. The numbers kind of work out that way, but coming from another great university would have the same advantage. Does having studied both in English and French give an advantage? Well, it will demonstrate your linguistic abilities, but that's really, we look for that threshold that we've set, that, let's say, high intermediate. And once you've reached that, if someone is perfectly fluent, in and of itself is not an advantage over someone who's just passively bilingual. We kind of grade files more on the academic performance and other factors. We just want to make sure that you have the linguistic abilities. So this might demonstrate it if you've taken courses, but that's it for that one. is there an advantage to completing an application before the deadline versus right on the deadline? Very good question again. We encourage you to do so because it makes our work easier. Does it mean that you'll be admitted more likely? No. You might get an answer earlier if we can. Like, there comes a point in the process where we really want to clean out the files that have been waiting for the longest time. But in terms of the determination of yes or no, no, it's not going to make a difference because it's not rolling in that sense. We have a deadline, and almost everyone applies in the last 3 weeks. And then there's the CJEP where everyone applies in the last 3 weeks. And so to make a distinction between one, you know, a couple of weeks, we don't. We make the offers to the strongest files, regardless of when they've applied, with the exception of those who choose to write the LSAT in February. Even though it might be a strong file, we probably won't admit. For a mature student who's applying, are we required to upload original transcript or having them sent directly from university? For anyone, mature university, you can upload an unofficial transcript copy, the type you would get as a student if you go. If you have an old transcript, you can scan that and send it to us. And it's only at the step, if you're admitted, then we ask for a full original. We reconcile the grades and confirm your admission. What are some of the do's and don'ts of the personal statement? Don't repeat your CV solely. Do be original, but not to the detriment of substance. Be authentic. If you're going to represent yourself, I mean, be honest, because if we admit you thinking you're someone else, you're going to come here and be miserable. So I think it's true, you have to not be afraid to break the mold a little bit, even though, you know, I don't know if law school seems very, you know, protocolaire, and you want to make sure you don't make any faux pas or anything. There's something to be said about taking a chance a little bit, but, you know, obviously use your judgment as well. Don't go over the word the length limit. Don't. And for the CV as well. If the admissions committee has decided, so we've told you it's 2 pages. If you submit a 4-page, they're not going to. It'll be in there, but they've all said they're not going to read more than 2 pages. So, okay. So I think that helped. I hope that's helpful. Okay. With this diploma, is it possible to practice law outside of Quebec, i.e. in the field of human rights or international law? Yes, it is possible to practice outside of Quebec, outside of Canada even. These questions about human rights law and international law are come up very often from people who haven't yet really understood what that means. You can do human rights law here in Montreal in that field. It doesn't mean, and you can do human rights law as a practicing lawyer going to court for someone who has had their human rights violated, or you can do it without being a jurist, but working without being a lawyer with a specific bar membership, but in a different capacity. And that applies to international law as well. Some international lawyers, and that is a term that needs to be defined, there's public international law, there's private international law. Probably if you work in private international law, you have to be a member of a bar somewhere. And our program opens a lot of doors, but you're not necessarily able to apply from any law degree from X jurisdiction and go to Italy. Like, Italy's not going to let you just become a lawyer because you have a legal degree. They're going to have their own courses that they'll want you to take on top of what you've done here, because it's specific to that jurisdiction. So if you want to become a lawyer in different jurisdictions, you have to look into what they want. We know the doors that are open for the jurisdictions we know, but there's something to be said. And then public international law, let's say you want to work for the UN, you can do so with any bar, like New York, Quebec, or any other, or you can do it without being a member of a bar at all. Sometimes graduates do a master's in international humanitarian law, and that's what opens the door for them to find a job in these fields. But definitely, as a law school, our student body is as mobile as any. Okay, so how do we look upon taking a year off between before law school, let's say between undergrad and law school? We think it's great. It depends what you choose to do for that 1 year. If you're at home watching TV, it's not going to be impressive. If you're globetrotting as a tourist, it's going to be marginally more interesting. If you're actually doing something, working, it's going to be more interesting. Are advanced degrees considered an asset, a hindrance, or have they no bearing on an application? So I graduate studies, I understand from the question. They're definitely an asset. I don't see how they can be a hindrance unless the grades are so terrible that it kind of brings down our impression of the undergrad record. But definitely they're an asset. Because, I mean, the more education, the better. As I said, well, we will put more weight on the undergrad academic performance because this is an undergrad program. And so if you've been able to perform well in, you know, 5 courses a term, some of them with a lot, you know, heavy-weighted final exams, then it's reassuring us you would do okay in this environment. Whereas a master's program, it's a little bit different. But it's definitely a good thing. Sometimes people are refused after an undergrad and choose to do a graduate degree because they like it, but also because it will give them maybe an edge when they reapply. All the questions are in English. Okay. What do you believe each student has in common who belong to the law faculty? I'd like to say nothing, but it's not true. You know, to say they're so diverse that, you know, they're all completely different, but no. They're good students coming in, for sure. And even the ones we admit that are on the lower range is still quite good students, and they're engaged, and they have some leadership, I would say. What is one mistake to avoid that commonly affects first-year students? In first year? Oh, that's more like a student life. I don't know if you would know yet. Overindulging in too many extracurriculars because there's just so much going on, so many student clubs, and I think to the detriment of your studies might kind of be difficult. But oh, do you want to come in? Okay. Oui, il y a beaucoup le syndrome de l'imposteur. Là, je me souviens, moi aussi, quand j'ai commencé, on pense tous qu'on est ceux qui ont été admis là, comme par la peau des dents. Puis non, c'est pas le cas. Puis oui, c'est vrai, c'est très sélectif à l'entrée. Puis une fois qu'on est admis, c'est vrai qu'il y a, moi, en tout cas, je sais pas, il y a comme un soulagement qui devrait se faire. Là, puis je pense qu'il faut l'encourager parce que, c'est sûr que tout le monde veut avoir des bonnes notes, puis ils sont comme habitués à avoir vraiment des bonnes notes. Puis ici, les notes comme le range, c'est tous, ben, tous, presque tous des étudiants qui ont eu B+ à moins 1. Puis là, il y en a beaucoup qui vont avoir des C+, puis des B-, puis ça les déstabilise. Donc, je pense que c'est un bon conseil de... Ils se trouvent des jobs quand même. Hein? Alors, OK, parfait. Une personne qui demande où sont les webcasts des séances précédentes. C'est la première fois qu'on filme celle-ci, donc elle va être en ligne peut-être dans une semaine. On a fait une séance le 23 septembre pour les repostulants, reapplicants. Donc, s'il y en a qui sont ici aujourd'hui, qui ont déjà fait une demande, qui ont été refusées puis qui veulent refaire une demande, vous êtes, c'est bien d'aller voir ça en ligne. Puis c'est sur bon, la faculté de droit, les admissions, c'est sur la page d'accueil des admissions au undergrad de la faculté de droit que vous allez les trouver. Voilà, il y a quelqu'un qui demande si j'ai appliqué l'année dernière et que j'ai été refusée, est-ce que c'est possible d'avoir les notes et les remarques sur mon dossier? Non. 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 Depuis le 1er septembre, la faculté a fait le choix de faire la séance dont je viens de vous parler, qui va vraiment en détail là, de tous les critères. Puis quand votre lettre de refus a dit X, ça veut dire X puis X. C'est tel, tel, tel critère qu'il faut améliorer. C'est vraiment très détaillé. Puis la faculté a choisi de ne plus donner de commentaires individuels. Ben, on en donne dans la lettre de refus. Ce sont des commentaires individuels, mais on ne donne pas plus d'informations individuelles sur la décision. Et allez voir la séance, parce qu'il y a vraiment beaucoup de common pitfalls, puis beaucoup de conseils pour améliorer la demande. OK. Pour un candidat adulte, venant de l'étranger, doit-on fournir un certificat d'équivalence des diplômes? Si vous l'avez, oui, vous pouvez soumettre une photocopie de ça, parce que ça peut nous aider, mais ce n'est pas une nécessité, parce qu'on en voit beaucoup, là, des diplômes internationaux, puis McGill a développé sa propre grille d'analyse, donc si vous l'avez, tant mieux, mais sinon, ce n'est pas nécessaire. What are common careers, but not traditional careers, that your graduates pursue? Non-traditional, I guess that means not larger law firm, not government, Department of Justice work. It can go, a lot of people will start out in these types of jobs because they're the jobs that hire non-experienced lawyers that give you a chance to become a member of a bar. So at the outset, there's a lot of that, although some will go into academia, well, go into graduate studies leading to academia. Some will go into businesses. Some will go into journalism. Some will work in organizations in legal and non-legal capacities. But if you look down the line, like 2, 3, 5, 10 years out, then a number of people have left. I mean, a good number stay. I was a bit surprised. A lot stay in private practice and government, but some, like me, who've done that for a number of years, then choose other jobs. A lot of them will go in-house, but it's still traditional in the sense you're practicing law, but for a single employer. Politics, if you have a joint degree, it might affect things too. The list is really long, and it's a really good question. Maybe we should work on just making a list of all these different careers. But really, there's nothing that you can't be a pediatrician. Obviously, that's out of your skill set. But you know how to write, you know how to argue, you know how to reason. You probably can figure out some accounting stuff if you put your mind to. So it's a bunch of skills that are helpful in all kinds of jobs, like the one I have now. So you could do all kinds of things. Is there a cutoff GPA for applicants from university? No. No. Each file will be read in university. In fact, like from year to year, there will be a range of grades that have been admitted. Last year, the lowest GPA we admitted, well, in percentage, was 75. Another year, it might be 72. So it depends on that amazing, well, that good, academically good, otherwise very good candidate each year that will determine the bottom of the range. But we will read all of the files with a view to hopefully find something in them that makes us not refuse them. If it's below 72 or below 75 and the rest is, it's not a cutoff, but the chances are very, very thin. are grades from an exchange program calculated into the GPA. I think they are, if they are integrated as part of your home institution transcript, is that right, Manon? Yeah, I think so, huh? So, but if your home institution just says exchange 15 credits, then no. But it will be on your transcript. Like, to the extent that you can provide whatever transcript, it will be looked at by the committee. Because that's it. With the academic performance, yes, we do a calculation because we need to have statistics on what the entering averages are. So there's a number with your file. But the committee members will go line by line and will look, oh, four courses that term, five that one, oh, a lot of upper year courses, the class averages are kind of high, so, oh, I see some bird courses in there. So there's a number, and then there's the detail, and the devil is in the details. So I hope that's helpful. Is there a danger in applying, then reapplying for the next admission cycle if you were not admitted? No. If you apply within a year or within 3 years, your old file will still exist. So the committee will probably go back and look at what the reasons were for not admitting you in the first place, and they will probably try to see what changed in between. This is something that I went into a lot more detail in the other session, but a lot of people reapply. Well, 10% of our pool last year was reapplicants, and 12% of the class was reapplicants last year. So the odds are, if anything, a little favorable based on the numbers. There are a lot of applicant types. There'll be the ones refused out of CGEP who apply within 3 years of, you know, when they finish their undergrad. So we still have their file, but it's almost like a different person because there's so much that has happened in those 3 years. So there's really no harm in reapplying if you refuse that of CGEP. That's kind of the norm, actually. And then there are those who were on the wait list and got refused and reapplied. So that's really positive, too. And then there are just those who want to reapply because they think they got a little bit better or they were able to tweak some things. And it's not negative. What can be negative is how, like, if nothing has changed in your file, you just reapply to reapply, hoping your luck is going to turn, then it's probably not going to be really good that we see that you've reapplied. But if we see that you've made an effort to improve, it's only positive. How risky is it to submit a professional letter instead of an academic as your second reference? I'm presuming this is not for a mature applicant, because if it is from a mature candidate, then it's perfectly acceptable. If you're a university candidate, you can. If your one academic letter reassures the committee at every level and it's a really strong one and you think the second letter will really talk about other sides of you in with good knowledge of who you are, it might be just as good as one or two, you know, one academic letter that's strong and then the other one that's really generic. It might be. But if you do that because your grades are a little lower and you think you would, you know, you've done better to impress a professional referee than an academic one, then the weakness of your file, which is the academic record, won't be helped up by the lack of academic reference letters. So it might, you know, if there's a weakness, it's better to address it than really overemphasize your strengths. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Let me look at the time. Okay, 5 more minutes. You're so patient. Okay. Ah, question pour les ambassadrices. Est-ce que vous avez fait le LSAT? Et pourquoi? Du cégep, c'est vraiment rare. Je ne sais même pas s'il y en a comme 5, là. Je ne sais même pas. Non. Un. Ah, oh, Manon dit qu'il y en a eu un. Oui, c'est ça. Sur plus que 300 demandes. C'est vraiment pas... Non, c'est pas nécessaire. Puis même quand on exclut les cégepiens et qu'on regarde la classe, c'est 41% de la classe qui l'ont fait. Donc, c'est vraiment plus... C'est un incontournable pour les candidats qui viennent de l'extérieur du Québec, à moins qu'ils veulent vraiment juste venir au Québec pour étudier, là. Puis peut-être certains candidats universitaires dont les notes étaient un petit peu plus basses. OK. If a student knows that they will be living in the state of New York in the future, does this student have to learn the Quebec law also? Well, the program is set here, and it's in rooted in Quebec law, Canadian law, some international law, so that student wouldn't be exempted from any courses at all. So, no. Yeah, I guess. If you're a student from the U.S., so there are a number of bars that you can write directly from McGill, and so it opens doors, but law in and of itself is a little territorial still, despite a lot more mobility or mobility agreements between different jurisdictions than it used to be the case. So, for example, if you're an American, we're not an ABA-approved law school. No law school in Canada is. So does that make a difference down the line? We have a good number of our students, when the economy allows, that go and work in the U.S. But you're always, I think an American who would choose to come and study here would have an innate interest in learning about Quebec and Canadian law or other types of laws than the New York law, because otherwise it doesn't really make sense to come here, I would say. The last one I have is a lot of information on a specific candidate, so I'm not gonna read it. But if that person wants to come and see me after, we can. And no other questions? I'll be repeating it. Yes? Oh, there's one there too? Okay, you know what? We're gonna wrap up the general interest one because it's 6, and you can come and ask Josie, Manon, or myself, or the students if you have student life, student perspective questions. Thank you very much. Thank you.
my students are in school, you don't need to take them because you have to have all the required courses done for the reason of these things, and it's really hard to put that together for 3 years.
But about a third of the class, I think.
Okay, and I also have to ask you, because I heard that it's pretty much half French, half English, but is it civil law that's more French, or even civil law is what English also is?
Yes. First-year courses are all offered in both languages. And to the extent that we can, you will have the choice. But it gets to a point, let's say someone's admitted off the wait list, then you might have to stick in the service room. And so that's kind of not even half and half in first-year, because we have two English sections and one French section. And then upper-year courses, about three-quarters are offered in English. So it's not really. It's just that you need to understand the language because there'll be materials to read. I mean, English taught class, there'll be materials on French and vice versa. And the civil law, we do offer courses in English and civil law, but a bit more. Sometimes you have practitioners, some civil law courses that you might have to teach in French, and vice versa with the common law. So it's not a hard and fast reading, but it's a sorry.
And my last question is, are there any debates in the class? Like, do students really participate in the class also?
I've heard that, yes. It's been, she went sit on a class just to see. Our students, I probably couldn't shut them up if you wanted, you know, I think they're smart enough to voice their opinions when it's informed or to bring a valuable point, but. And the method of evaluation is also, they don't have any 100% finals, so there are a lot of like class group assignments, and, you know, so I think it lends itself to a more kind of type of classroom experience. So, yeah, I think that.
Oh, my last question I want to ask is that if someone works, let's say, $25 a week, and they don't have a GPA 3.7, 3.8, but they have a good GPA nonetheless, is that looked at as a
yes,
maybe
yes.
She's
sort of
bothered
with
the
things that
she works on?
Yes. I have examples
of that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bonjour.
Moi, c'est les écrits, c'est
pas OK.
Moi, j'ai fini la maîtrise à l'an ici. J'ai écrit en mémoire ici pendant 2 ans.
OK.
Mon dernier rapport prof avec un professeur, c'est ma directrice de mémoire. Là, j'ai opté quelques j'ai des cours de droit à temps partiel pour tester mon intérêt. Pour la deuxième maître, je me pose une question, où aller la chercher entre un prof de cours de droit qui nous des bonnes notes, mais qui connaît peu. Parce que sinon, avec un temps de travail à l'université, comme on sait, je suis étranger. Dans mon travail, là, je travaille beaucoup avec une bookman qui est avocate, je pourrais parler de mon travail avec elle, mais c'est pas du tout quelqu'un qui me supervise directement.
Okay.
Donc le pot d'eau.
Oui, mais certainement votre superviseur
d'hôtel. Oui, ça c'est sûr.
Je sais pas s'il y a un co-superviseur, un co-évaluateur ou non. Aucun des scénarios politiques me semble choquant ou très négatif.
Okay.
Je pense que ça peut être quelqu'un qui. Non, ben, surtout pas, je ne sais pas votre niveau d'anglais, mais faire la LSAT, c'est bien réussir, c'est un ancien tout à fait, ça serait votre crédibilité. Pensez-vous comme anglais. Donc, non, moi, c'est It's hard for us to say. We usually say the more information we have, it's better for us to. But if you don't really have saving circumstances, like medical or something, it's just we're adjusting to university life. And I don't know. Sometimes it's like, they're just very abstract and they don't want to fight each other.